Hi, I'm Andrew Corbett, and I'd like to introduce you to a Bible study series that I've written for small groups and perhaps for personal enrichment called How to Be a Covenant Community of Believers, a study of Romans chapter 12, verses 9 to 21. This is lesson 2, Abhor What is Evil, based on Romans chapter 12, verse 9. And we're going to have a look in this study at what it means to abhor, and to abhor in particular, to abhor evil. In order to love well, a person must also know what they are not to love. Followers of Christ are called to train their emotions to conform to the heart of God and begin to increasingly feel how he feels about evil. In Genesis 2 verse 9, God forbids Adam and Eve from eating from the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Evil is therefore the opposite of good. When something or someone violates their God-ordained good purpose, it becomes evil. For example, a car was designed for a good purpose, but when it is used to intentionally harm people, its usage becomes evil. And we've seen recent examples of this where we've seen people representing terrorist organizations use trucks and cars to mow innocent bystanders down. And so we would call that evil. Question 1, how would you respond to someone who described an earthquake, which resulted in the tragic loss of human life, as evil? Is this the kind of evil that Romans 12:9 is referring to? Well, we would argue that something like an earthquake, which is often called natural evil, is not intrinsically evil. In fact, if you have people who are geologists and they're aware of the purpose of earthquakes, you could very quickly come to realize that God has designed for this world to be subject to earthquakes. Earthquakes form a very vital function, especially oceanic earthquakes, but even other earthquakes form a very vital function. These earthquakes enable mineral deposits to come to the surface. They also carve out chasms for rivers to flow. Oceanic earthquakes also distribute nutrients through the Earth's water systems and enable the Earth to flourish. In fact, life on Earth would not be possible if it were not for earthquakes. So that's a very interesting thing. So how would you respond? Well, firstly, if they had lost a loved one in an earthquake, I probably wouldn't give the answer I just gave. I would want to empathize and sympathize with their loss. If it was an abstract question, that's when I'd probably say, you know what? Earthquakes in and of themselves are not evil. They actually serve a function. When people ignore fault lines and they go ahead and build houses and homes on fault lines where earthquakes are bound to happen, they're running a risk that they should be aware of. How would we understand Romans 12:9 when it talks about evil? Well, probably Romans 12:9 does not have this kind of evil in mind. It probably has intentional, man-made human evil in mind. Question 2, the Greek word translated here as abhor is used only once in the New Testament. And this is it, Romans 12:9. It is the superlative of hate. To hate a lot is to detest. To hate utterly is to abhor. What kind of evil are Christians to abhor? And how can Christians be loving and abhorring at the same time? Well, the opposite of hate is not love. The opposite of abhorring is also, therefore, not love. How can Christians be loving and abhorring evil at the same time? The two have to go together, because if you love what is good, you will have to hate what is evil. What is the evil that Romans 12:9 has in mind when it talks about abhor evil? Well, arguably, it's that kind of evil which hurts the most vulnerable, especially the kind of evil which jeopardizes people's eternity, their eternal salvation. We are to hate, abhor that kind of evil. And of course, that abhorring of that kind of evil is only possible if we truly love people. Question 3, how is the believer's life contrasted to that of the unbeliever according to Romans chapter 1, verses 29 to 30? Romans chapter 1, verses 29 to 30 says this: they were filled with all manner of unrighteousness, evil, covetousness, malice. They are full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, maliciousness. They are gossips, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, haughty, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents. So those who don't know God, unbelievers, non-believers I should say, are people who it describes in this passage, in these two verses, as being full, not only full of evil, they are filled with all manner of evil, it actually describes them as being inventors of evil. Well, how is the believer's life contrasted to that? Well, exactly the opposite. The believer's life is full of good, and we are devising ways to be kind and to show goodness to others. So that's how the believer's life is contrasted. So the unbeliever is contrasted with intentional acts of evil. Question 4, what is the ultimate destiny of those who love what is evil, according to John 5, verse 29, which says, "And come out those who have done good to the resurrection of life, and those who have done evil to the resurrection of judgment or condemnation." So the ultimate destiny of those who love evil and do evil is eternal condemnation. There's some pretty dire consequences here to that. Question 5, is abhorring a passive response or an active one? That is abhorring just a matter of not loving, or does it require something to be done? Well, arguably, as you have a discussion in your group about this, and this is one of those questions that's designed to provoke a bit of discussion, and as a group leader, what you would be doing at this point is seeing who responds, let them answer so that everyone else in the group knows it's okay to share their opinion, and then probably look at the person who's thinking about this, the wistful one, the one who's contemplating this, and ask them. So if it's Belinda, you say, "Belinda, do you have a thought about this?" Or Bruce, do you have anything to contribute here? How do you see this? And what you're doing there is gently inviting them into the discussion. And oftentimes they'll probably be dismissive of the opportunity. Don't worry about that. Leave it hanging, and then they'll probably contribute an answer. That's the skill of leading a small group too, by the way, to know how to elicit discussion. Evil is mentioned several times in Romans chapter 12, verses 9 to 21 passage. The New Testament is very emphatic about what our attitude should be toward evil. Note 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 6. It prescribes, prescribes as a means for the believer to develop their hatred of what is evil. Well, 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 6 says this: "Now these things took place as examples for us, that we might not desire evil as they did." And it's talking about the records of the Old Covenant, the records of the Old Testament. So those episodes where we can look in the Old Testament at what happened when people ran after evil and the consequences that resulted are meant to serve, as it says in this verse, as examples to us, that we might not desire to run after evil as they did. So what's the prescription for developing our hatred of evil? Become familiar with the scripture, especially the Old Testament. Become familiar with those things. All right, here's a question that is designed to provoke thought. It's designed to have people think about it. So here, why, question 6, why don't Christians hate or abhor enough? And it sounds strange, you know, you're asking why don't Christians hate enough? And of course, part of the problem is that Christians have hated people. They've hated the wrong things. None of this abhor what is evil is inviting us, permitting us to hate people. It's inviting us and granting that we should hate the evil that's been committed. But why don't enough or more Christians hate what is evil? Here's three answers, which would probably come up in one way or another in your discussion. Your group might come up with others. Here's three that I can think of just off the top of my head. One, there is a price to pay. When you hate evil, there's a price to pay. Secondly, it can be difficult to take action against evil. And thirdly, it's easier to think that someone else will deal with it. So when you think about some of the evil practices that have happened over the years that have particularly affected the vulnerable, we think of the abolition of slavery. You know, the people that pioneered that movement in the 18th century, people like William Wilberforce, they paid a price. It was difficult for them. It almost certainly was easier to think, well, let someone else do it. And so you can imagine that if that continues, that's why there would be few Christians, not enough Christians, who are standing up and hating evil enough to do something about it. And today we have more people in slavery than at any other time in history. So if you're looking for a cause to get passionate about, slavery right now today is one of them. Sex slavery of children and young girls is disgraceful. There's other acts of evil, which includes domestic violence, where men in particular, not that it's always exclusively men, but it often is, majority is statistically, is an evil. And we would do well if we campaigned and did what we could to overcome this evil. Well, these questions, I've moved through them fairly quickly, but they are designed to have you get your group thinking, provoke them to consider what it means to abhor evil. Bless you. Hope this study has gone well for you. There's 27 in this series, and I think your group will benefit because these 27 imperatives of what it means to be a covenant community will bless any local church. Bless you. I'm Andrew Corbett.